talking about in the media, overemphasizing whenever he finds people running from fear or politics. He does exactly the opposite of what the past administration did. When that happened to the past administration, they hid under a rock. But Barack Obama comes out full square and reasonably, rationally, in detail, lays out his thinking behind what he is doing, what he intends to do, why he intends to do it, and most importantly, how it fits in with the rule of law and the Constitution. I'd like to say it was a masterful performance today, and no doubt our president is a very good speaker. And yet, with all due lack of humility, as Bob Kincaid pointed out when I mentioned this to him, I've been saying exactly these same things for the past 5 years. Do you think President Obama's been listening into my show? I can't say I'm the only one. Many, many commentators have been saying these things. And the irony is that his speech dealt with exactly the problems I discussed right here on the air over the last couple of days. 2 days ago, in a show that will be repeated tomorrow, I did a debate with Mike Lane that I entitled Haunted by the Bush Administration. Already in today's Washington Post, somebody has copied my headline because it is a haunting. Haunting in the sense of a ghost that won't go away, that has to be dealt with, that's getting in the way of a president that definitely wants to move on and deal with such essential issues as the economy and health care and the environment and jobs and civil rights and education and you name it. But also haunted by the fact that left and right can't give it up. And I understand why, and I talked about why I understood why. As I mentioned in my broadcast, the great novelist William Faulkner once said, "The past is not dead, it's not even past." The past is not past. What brilliance. Faulkner was right. The past constantly informs the present. And it is our history of the past, our telling of that story, our understanding of what happened before, that explains who we are and what we are doing today. Perhaps the past will never be the past. But unless we work through it, unless we exercise our ghosts, we can never move on to a very important present. Well, Barack Obama did that today, and I think he did it masterfully. And I agreed with about 98% of what he said. He dealt with everything, and we'll go through it. He dealt with everything, everything from what he's going to do with the prisoners in Guantanamo Bay to the release or lack of release of the photographs, the release of the memos, to how it is he's going to structure military commissions. And in all his speech, there were three words repeated again and again and again, like a mantra. Three words that I've been using pretty consistently for the last 6 years. Rule of law. I haven't counted how many times in speech he used rule of law. I would suspect it was a couple dozen, perhaps only exceeded by the number of times he mentioned the Constitution. Standing in the National Archives of Washington, D.C., surrounded by the original of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and the Declaration of Independence. And Barack Obama made clear that the way the past administration prosecuted this war was contrary to our laws, contrary to our Constitution, contrary to international norms, contrary to the American way. And yet, he fully understood the need to protect our country. And still, he understood that there doesn't have to be a contradiction between those two principles, as much as the Republican Party wants to make it seem like there is. He even talked about the politics of it all. I was astonished yesterday when I was talking about Congress. I mentioned a lot of good they had done on credit cards and such. But there was ugly, too. And perhaps the ugliest thing that happened yesterday was when Congress voted by overwhelming numbers, 90-6 in the Senate, a vote I would have been in the six, the minority, 90-6 saying, we're not going to give you money to take down Guantanamo until you tell us what you're going to do with the prisoners. All right, fine. Obama told us today in detail. As I said yesterday, it was pure political posturing. It was Congress saying, all right, you have to tell us first, as if they didn't trust this president to make sure that there wouldn't be terrorists running loose on American soil. Okay, all right, fine. That's why I said I think it was a tempest in a teapot. Let them go ahead and vote that way. But now that they've heard the speech today, they will proceed with dismantling of Guantanamo Bay. Let's go through what our president told us today. First of all, he detailed why the past way of doing things is not the right way to go forward. It's not just torture. It's not just the enhanced interrogation technique. The fact is, those techniques were illegal, unlawful. And part of the controversy over what House Speaker Nancy Pelosi knew and when she knew it goes into how the CIA tells members of Congress about these kinds of things. That was done in an illegal manner as well. We can discuss the details of that later on in the hour. But at the heart of Barack Obama's speech was the absolute understanding that checks and balances are the hallmark of the American Constitution. Now, you know, he was a constitutional lawyer. That should go without saying. Obviously, that's true. And yet, these words to me, I don't know, I guess they made me swoon. Maybe because I hunger, I ache, I thirst for the rule of law after 8 years of lawlessness by a president put in place by a coup d'etat of a Supreme Court that rejected the democratic choice of Americans in both the popular vote and the Electoral College when the majority of Floridians and Americans voted for Al Gore. Lawlessness beget lawlessness, and I think it's no surprise that the 8 years of lawlessness followed the coup d'etat that put Bush into office. Here are the words. This is the essence of what Barack Obama said, and I didn't see it quoted anywhere, but I happen to have the entire speech. Quote, in our constitutional system, prolonged detention should not be the decision of any one man. If and when we determine that the United States must hold individuals to keep them from carrying out an act of war, we shall do so within a system that involves judicial and congressional oversight. And so going forward, my administration will work with Congress to develop an appropriate legal regime so that our efforts are consistent with our values and our Constitution. Prolonged detention should not be the decision of any one man. Barack Obama in the speech spells out, in some ways, how his hands were tied. Some 21 of the 240-odd prisoners in Guantanamo Bay have already been ordered to be released by the courts. Are the Republicans really telling Barack Obama that he should disobey a direct order of the United States Supreme Court? Are they really saying that? I don't know. Presidents have done that. Though I can't think of a really good one since President Andrew Jackson. He was the president that refused Chief Justice Marshall's order to stop persecuting Native Americans, forcing them to go on the Trail of Tears from their homes in places like Tennessee, my home state, to new lands in Oklahoma. President Andrew Jackson said, when Chief Justice Marshall gets his own army, he can tell me to enforce that order. I think the direct quote is, Chief Justice Marshall has made his order, now let him enforce it. It's generally understood today that that's not the way things should act. It's generally understood today that presidents are not above the law. And Barack Obama repeated that. To those who complained about his release of the legal memos, he reminded us that there was a court proceeding under law, under the Freedom of Information Act, to release those memos. Heck, it is to be remembered that even though he did not release the pictures, and that's the one thing I disagree with him on, there is a court case to release those as well. And I have no doubt if the president loses in court, he will obey the law and release the pictures. And indeed, he frankly gave me a bit of pause. I'm going to get to that. He made me think. Whatever you think of his decision not to release the pictures, he gave reasons. He gave a rational approach. He showed that he had carefully considered the issues. So let's go through. Let's go through what he said. First of all, he immediately got rid of this ridiculous idea, I guess promulgated by Rush Limbaugh and Fox News, though sadly, apparently parroted by a number of cowled members of Congress, and not just Republicans, Democrats too. This absurd idea that there's some danger to the United States of America if some of the 240 detainees in Guantanamo are brought to our shores. Obama didn't quite say that, these people don't practice witchcraft, they're not Harry Potter, their mere entrance on our soil will not lead to detonations or explosions. But you could hear it in his voice. The notion that our supermax prisons are somehow invulnerable to terrorists, or I should say vulnerable to terrorists, the notion that they're vulnerable is ridiculous. They are invulnerable. Frankly, I heard the FBI Director Robert Mueller, a person who, frankly, I don't have much respect for, I must say, ever since Robert Mueller helped squash the investigation into the connection between white supremacists and Islamic terrorists because he didn't want to expose the FBI breaking the law, I've had my doubts about Director Mueller. But when Director Mueller came on air yesterday before Congress and said there were dangers with having these people in the United States, I didn't get it. Are there dangers releasing people who want to murder Americans into the American general population? You betcha, as Sarah Palin might say. But nobody's proposing that. Least of all, Barack Obama. So where do the ideas come from? Well, they come from the Republicans. They come from Republicans. They don't want cap and trade. They don't want credit card rights. They don't want health care. They want to make hay out of whatever they can. But all it takes is a certain rationality to recognize that it doesn't make any sense. This isn't something that Barack Obama is asking for. I guess I have to read it in his speech. Quote, let me begin by disposing of one argument as plainly as I can, the president said a few hours ago. Quote, we are not going to release anyone if it would endanger our national security, nor will we release detainees within the United States who endanger the American people. Where demanded by justice and national security, we will seek to transfer some detainees to the same type of facilities which we hold all manner of dangerous and violent criminals within our borders. Highly secure prisons that ensure the public safety. As we make these decisions, bear in mind the following fact. Nobody has ever escaped from one of our federal supermax prisons, which hold hundreds of convicted terrorists. As Senator Lindsey Graham said, when Barack Obama is quoting Lindsey Graham, you know that something is not reasonably in dispute. Quote, the idea that we cannot find a place to securely house 250-plus detainees within the United States is not rational. Unquote. It is irrational. It is illogical. It is crazy, the president is saying. And he didn't really mince words. It's all about fear. It's all about fear and 30-second ads, which, again, the president mentioned. That's why you've got to listen to today's speech. He actually goes into the politics of it as well. He said, as our efforts to close Guantanamo move forward, I know that the politics in Congress will be difficult. These issues are fodder for 30-second commercials and direct mail pieces that are designed to frighten. I get it. But if we continue to make decisions from within a climate of fear, we will make more mistakes. And he reminds Congress, I love this, quote, I am not the only person in this city who swore an oath to uphold the Constitution. So did each and every member of Congress, unquote. Hello? So what will he do with the prisoners in Guantanamo Bay? And what about the fact that one study shows that about 5% of the released prisoners have actually gone back to terrorist acts, and some 10% are expected to have? There was a report that of the 540 or so detainees released from Guantanamo by the Bush administration, a little under 30, that's where I get 5%, a little under 30 had actually committed terrorist acts, about 27, and about 47 are suspected to have committed terrorist acts. That's scary. It's understandably scary. Well, Barack Obama points out that he didn't do that. Don't blame me. Perhaps I've never heard of a president so clearly say, blame the guy before. He named the Bush administration by name. And he pointed out that if we had had a process by which we could have determined who was guilty and who was innocent, maybe this wouldn't have happened. Maybe we wouldn't have released the detainees that caused these terrorist acts. Because, you see, the Bush administration was doing everything ad hoc. They were making up laws as they went along. I shouldn't say laws. They weren't laws. Barack Obama said rule of law 24 times in his speech, perhaps, but he never once uttered the words enemy combatants. You know why? You know why enemy combatants is nowhere found in Barack Obama's speech today? Because it's a made-up term. It's not in the law. It doesn't exist. There's no such friggin' thing as an enemy combatant. You can look through a million pages of the U.S. Code and you won't find it there. It ain't there. It's made up. It's made up because the Bush administration didn't like the term prisoner of war because there are laws of war. And they didn't like the term criminal defendant because there are laws for criminal defendants. So we get things like detainees, meaning a person who's detained. That one at least is in the law. But even detainees are classified, and they're not classified as enemy combatants. So Barack Obama has said that he's going to try to classify each of these. Those are my words, not his. There are the 20 or so that have to be released because the court said so. And Barack Obama has to obey the courts. And if you don't like it, you know, complain about the courts. That leaves about 220. Approximately 50 that we're seeking to give securely to foreign governments. Obviously, that has to be done carefully. And I trust this president will be careful. But it will also be done with oversight, as everything should be. Oversight by Congress, oversight by the courts. This is a president who believes in checks and balances. And you know what's so nice about checks and balances? The great thing about checks and balances is if things go wrong, you can't even blame only the president. Why do you think the Republicans were so determined to show that Nancy Pelosi knew all about this? Well, she didn't, and we'll get to that. But why are they so focused on it? Because they want to pass the buck, pass the blame. Even if Nancy Pelosi knew everything about it, and I'm not convinced that she did, there's a huge difference between someone who makes policy and notifies somebody else and that person's failure to what? What could she have done? What could she have done? She couldn't speak out. That's illegal. That's disclosing secrets. She did pass legislation to ban torture, and the administration found loopholes to help the CIA. She did take power and finally ended this. But see, with checks and balances, you can actually bring people in on your decisions. Bring them along. And come to a consensus, and then once you move forward, if there's a mistake, everyone's to blame. Don't get me wrong. I'm not letting Nancy Pelosi off the hook. To the extent she knew about it, she should have done everything she could to try to stop it. Did she? I think that's an open question. After all, we knew about it, too. I've been reporting on this kind of thing since 2003. Now, we didn't know it in detail, neither did Nancy Pelosi. We didn't have all the facts. We didn't have the memos. We just had selective leaks. That's what I based my reports on. That's why I talked about it, to get people to do something about it. And we did what we could. We elected a new government. But the reason why the Republicans want to blame Nancy Pelosi is because they want to bring her in, tar her with it, and therefore excuse what the Bush administration did. Well, Barack Obama has a better idea. He's going to bring everyone in from the outset. Congress and the courts. So 20 or so will be freed. 50 they're going to try to get foreign governments to take. Hopefully they can take the Uyghurs, the Chinese ethnic group that practice a religion that causes them to be persecuted in Pakistan. These poor individuals who got wrapped up in the being in the wrong place at the wrong time, sold by bounty hunters and kept in Guantanamo Bay for the last 5 years. I'm concerned they may become terrorists. I mean, might you, if you were forcibly jailed for no reason? I hope not. I hope you wouldn't. I hope I wouldn't. I hope they won't. That would be a really real atrocity. To the extent that we tortured innocent people and then they then become terrorists. Yikes. You have to let them go. They're innocent, but we may have created terrorists then and there. So that's maybe a third of them. And then the others will be put in nice legal packages where they should be. Some will be tried in federal courts. The same federal courts that put away the first World Trade Center attempted destroyers who are serving life terms right now in New York. They were tried by a jury. They had full due process, they were convicted, and no one is worried, at least I'm not worried, that they're going to get out and do anything. And some, and I think Barack Obama is absolutely right about this, although some on the left have condemned him for this, some will not be tried in federal civil courts, they will be in federal criminal courts, they will be tried as prisoners of war before military commissions. And I support this. Not Bush's military commissions, which allow no due process, no access to lawyer, indefinite detention, no way to challenge unreliable hearsay. But the kind of military commissions that Barack Obama is describing, and this is not a flip-flop, as I've said before. Obama opposed the Bush military commissions because they didn't follow the rule of law. They didn't allow due process. They didn't allow someone to show that they're innocent. But sometimes, in wartime, you need military commissions. You need rules of war. The reason you have separate prisoners of war and military commissions, and Obama's right, they go back to George Washington, is because sometimes you can have someone in a war against the United States that hasn't committed a criminal act, right? I mean, you have people who have directed the bombing of the World Trade Center, all right? The hijacking of the planes, they're behind 9/11, or they've attempted an attack. All right, that's conspiracy. That's something that you can try. For example, one of the first people that we're going to try is, guess what? One of the bombers of the U.S. embassies in Kenya and Tanzania. Remember those? Remember the Republicans complaining that Bill Clinton never got around to getting those people? Well, people always forget that those attacks occurred near the end of his presidency, and certainly George Bush did nothing. But one of those people, a guy by the name of Ahmed Khalfan Gailani, is alleged to be an al-Qaeda operative. He's been indicted as having committed the two bombings in both Kenya and Tanzania. He was captured in Pakistan in 2004 and held in a secret site by the CIA and transferred to Guantanamo in 2006. He was indicted in 1998, this man, for 236 counts related to the killing of more than 200 people, including 12 Americans, in those bombings in Kenya and Tanzania. So let's try him. Let's put the evidence before a jury. It sounds to me like they're going to get a conviction. Lock him up. Throw away the key. Heck, as far as I'm concerned, if they prove it, I'm okay with the death penalty. I really am. I don't have any sympathy for this guy. But I do have sympathy for the Bill of Rights. I do have sympathy for due process. He has to have a right to show that he didn't do it. The government has to prove its case beyond a reasonable doubt. He has the right to remain silent. If they've got the evidence, prove it. It looks like they do. Terrific. I'm not worried. But here's the kicker, folks. Here's the kicker. Gailani was captured in 2004. He wasn't delivered to the U.S. prosecutors in New York City who had indicted him. No, he was held in a secret site for 2 years and then brought to Guantanamo for the last 3 years. And do you know what his lawyer is doing? And I don't blame him. It's part of our Constitution. The lawyer is now asking that his case be dismissed against him because he didn't have a speedy trial. You got to admit, his lawyer has a point. Precisely because we violated the law, precisely because we violated the Constitution, we violated the Bill of Rights under George Bush, we have given some of these people are terrorists, and we've given the ones that are a way out. What if we can prove they're guilty, but they were tortured and they said such things that caused them to incriminate themselves? Now you're going to have to prove that, as they say in the criminal law, that it is not the fruit of the poisonous tree. That we have separate evidence, apart from the confessions obtained under torture, to prove that they indeed did what we said they did. As President Obama pointed out in his speech today, of the 700-odd people that were ever incarcerated in Guantanamo Bay, 500-odd have been freed, 240 or so remain, and three, count them, 1, 2, 3, have been convicted of terrorism. Those ain't good odds. What's that, 2%, 3%? Not even 3%. And the sad thing is, because we broke the law, it's going to be harder to prosecute these people. Confessions obtained by torture have to be thrown out by the courts. Unless Republicans argue they don't follow the rule of law. And now we're going to have a court deal with this speedy trial motion. Now, I suspect that judges are smart people. They'll find some way to balance his rights against the government. They recognize that this person is probably a very dangerous person. And they'll find some way to say that even if he'd had a speedy trial, he still would have been convicted. And I think the motion will fail. But you see what damage it does to our values? This man should have had a speedy trial. We all should have a speedy trial. Now, I admit, a speedy trial helps the innocent more than the guilty. If you're innocent, you want to be able to have quickly show the government, hey, I didn't do it, let me go. Now, if you're guilty, admittedly, I guess it doesn't matter too much whether you're convicted and then serve life or whether you serve 2 years or then convicted and then serve the rest of your life. I suspect that's why the court will dismiss his motion. But that's just because we're lucky. Lucky? Lucky? Lucky. Then he's probably guilty. If he's innocent, then we really have egg in our face. I mean, that's the really scary thing. The scary thing to me is not the guilty people in Guantanamo Bay. I don't feel so sorry for them. I feel sorry for our Bill of Rights. I feel sorry for our rule of law. I don't want to torture them. But I wouldn't exactly invite these men in my home. But what about the innocent? What about the innocent people that we tortured? Maher Arar, sent to Syria to be beaten by cables, a Canadian citizen. Or Al-Masri. I don't know if you saw that 60-minute piece. This is a German citizen of Turkish origin, who was trying to learn about Islam because he was a secular Muslim and he was marrying a more religious girl. So he went to an Islamic school in Pakistan to try to get a decent Islamic education, caught by a bounty hunter, tortured, brought to Guantanamo for many years, recently released. Torturing the guilty doesn't make me happy. But torturing the innocent makes me lie awake at night, wondering what we have become. And you know the scary thing? The people who do the torture usually don't know at the outset whether someone's guilty or innocent. So if you're going to do some torture, you're going to torture some innocent people. Well, there will be trials for some of them in federal criminal court. And for those that you can't have a trial, we will have military commissions. And they will be under the laws of war. God, it was just beautiful to see the President of the United States cite the laws of war, recognizing there are laws of war. Even in war, it's not anything goes. There are laws of war. And this constitutional scholar, our president, recognized that. Because you can have someone dedicated to fight and destroy the United States who hasn't committed a criminal act yet. Imagine two armies. That's probably the easiest case to imagine. Let's say we're fighting, Japan in World War II. And the Japanese soldiers are trying to harm American soldiers. Well, you might find a Japanese soldier and capture him in battle and he surrenders and he's never picked up he's never shot an American soldier before, but if given a chance, he's going to pick up his gun and shoot at an American soldier. You can't let him free and you can't try him for a crime that he hasn't committed. His only crime has been serving in the Japanese military. That's why you have laws of war. That's why you have prisoner of war camps. Even the Nazis we put in prisoner of war camps and frankly treated them pretty humanely. So humanely that some of the Nazis actually became very pro-American after the war was over. Fancy that. Fancy that. The Nazis. The worst, bunch of people on the planet in history. The source of fascism. The Nazis. The people who were in the death camps killing innocent people. Some of them. More German soldiers probably than death camp guards. Were humanely treated by the United States. And were very anti-Hitler when they were released. So I understand the need to detain prisoners of war. I get it. And Barack Obama gets it, too. They can't be tried in our federal criminal courts. That's fine. They'll be tried before military commissions. But it's due process. Let me read to you what he said in the speech. I swear, I could have written this one. Hire me, Mr. President. I could have written this speech. I think I could have cited it in my sleep. Direct quote from Barack Obama. The second category of cases, after the cases that involve federal criminal courts, the second category of cases involves detainees who violate the laws of war and are best tried through military commissions. Military commissions have a history in the United States dating back to George Washington and the Revolutionary War. They are an appropriate venue for trying detainees for violations of the laws of war. They allow for the protection of sensitive sources and methods of intelligence gathering, for the safety and security of participants, and for the presentation of evidence gathered from the battlefield that cannot be effectively presented in federal courts. Note he said the battlefield. You have to have someone who's actually involved in some kind of war. They'd have to be a member of the Taliban or Al-Qaeda or some terrorist organization. You can't just pick up poor Mr. Al-Masri, the German citizen. I think he was born in Germany. It's his parents that are Turkish. The secular Muslim from Germany who was on a trip to learn a little bit more about Islam. You can't just pick him up. He's got to be part of the battlefield. And Barack Obama points out that he didn't flip-flop, that he's always supported the use of some military commissions, but differing from the Bush administration, he says, my administration is bringing our commissions in line with the rule of law. There's my favorite three words. The rule will no longer permit us to use as evidence statements that have been obtained using cruel, inhuman, or degrading interrogation methods. Pretty good. No more tortured confessions. I guess that lets John McCain off the hook when he condemned America, since it was under torture. Quote, we will no longer place the burden to prove that hearsay is unreliable on the opponent of the hearsay, unquote. Well, that's good. Can you imagine? Someone accuses you of something. Someone says, I'll pick on poor Bob Kincaid. Someone says, Bob Kincaid, we have you in jail because some person you've never heard of says that they saw you consorting with Al-Qaeda. And it's up to Bob to prove that that person is unreliable. No. You have to prove the person is reliable. If you have an accusation, the burden of proof is on the prosecution. That's part of our law. Obama goes on, we will give detainees greater latitude in selecting their own counsel, more protections if they refuse to testify. These reforms, among others, will make our military commissions a more credible and effective means of administering justice, and I will work with Congress and legal authorities across the political spectrum on legislation to ensure these commissions are fair, legitimate, and effective. Ding, 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 ding. You know, it really wasn't that brilliant. I'm sorry, President Obama. It just seems brilliant because we've gotten used to 8 years of lawlessness. All President Obama did today is cite the law and said, I'll follow it. That's all he did. It's actually very simple. I think a first-year law student could do it. Heck, I don't think you even have to go to law school. You say, I'll follow the law. And yet it seems brilliant. Because we hunger. We hunger for a government that respects the rule of law. So what about the pictures? the part that, I and others have most condemned Obama for. I happen to believe that these things should be exposed because, it happened. It's part of history. And I think it's hard to get past something unless you disclose what we did. But I have to admit, Barack Obama today gave a very strong argument that gives me pause, and I have to give that argument the respect which it deserves. President Obama said he released the memos, which the Republicans, of course, had urged him not to release, because there was no overriding reason to protect them. He didn't release them, he said, because he disagreed with the torture techniques that he calls enhanced interrogation that the memos authorized, or because he rejected their legal rationale, although he does reject both. He says he released the memos because the existence of their approach to interrogation had already been widely known. The Bush administration had already acknowledged its existence, and I, the President of the United States, had already banned those methods. The argument that somehow, by releasing those memos, we are providing terrorists with information about how they will be interrogated is unfounded. We will not be interrogating terrorists using that approach because the approach is now prohibited. Strong. Okay, but what about the photographs? Barack Obama says, on the other hand, I recently opposed the release of certain photographs taken by detainees by U.S. personnel between 2002 and 2004. Individuals who violated standards of behavior in these photos have been investigated and held accountable. There is no debate as to whether what is reflected in those photos is wrong, and nothing has been concealed to absolve perpetrators of crimes. However, it was my judgment, informed by my national security team, that releasing these photos would inflame anti-American opinion and allow our enemies to paint U.S. troops with a broad, damning, and inaccurate brush, endangering them in theaters of war. He goes on to say there are 200,000 Americans serving in harm's way. All right, here's the deal. I want President Obama to be right. I really do. We will see whether these people are prosecuted. We will see whether Congress and the courts do what they are supposed to do. And if they do what they are supposed to do, then, we should still release these photos, but we can release them 5 or 10 years from now, maybe when there are no more American troops in Afghanistan or Iraq. But the important thing is that no one be absolved and that these not be secret. Everyone in Congress should see these photos. Everyone in the courts should see these photos. Lawyers who are defending their clients should see these photos. And as long as every member of Congress sees them and the proper courts see them, I'm okay with holding off for a few years. I'll accept that. All right, President Obama. As long as the perpetrators don't get away with it. Now, I fear they will. And that's why I want the photos released. I fear that Cheney will get off scot-free, that John Yoo will get off scot-free, that Bybee will get off scot-free, because there's something about words on a page that just don't have the kind of visceral reaction that the photos do. But I fully admit that's a political reason. If, Mr. President, you're right that these people will be prosecuted, maybe I'm just naive to believe that. In fact, actually, I don't believe it will happen, but I'm willing to give you the benefit of the doubt. I'd bet against it, but I'm willing to give you the benefit of the doubt. Let's go for a couple of years. Let's see if these people are prosecuted. Allow the courts and the Congress, don't hide anything from them, because you're right. Congress has the right of oversight. Let them look at this. Let Maxine Waters and John Conyers and Barney Frank and others see these photos, and Leahy and Durbin and Feingold. Let them look at it. Let them investigate. Let them know what happened so that we can make sure this never happens again. I do understand what he's saying, the idea that people will assume and will use propaganda to say that these photos are emblematic of who we are today, when I do believe the president to say they're emblematic of who we were and not who we are. And then I think that as time has passed and no more atrocities have been shown over the next 5-10 years, then it should come out as a matter of history. But the point is this. I don't have to agree with everything this president does. But this president has given me, has given you, has given all of us the courtesy of explaining why he did what he did, why he believes it complies with the rule of law, why he believes that it protects American security, why he believes it reflects American values, why he believes it complies with the checks and balances of the United States Constitution. And that's really all I can ask the president to do. I can't ask him to agree with me 100% of the time. And that's why I gotta say I disagree with the ACLU. Well, I like the ACLU. But when Anthony Romero, the head of the ACLU, starts talking about the Bush-Obama policies, well, our president rightly bristles. He doesn't want anyone to say anything Bush-Obama policies. But you got to give the devil their due. I wouldn't call them the devil. You got to give ACLU their due. I would not talk about Bush-Obama policies, but I understand why the ACLU does. That's their job. You know, for all the good that Martin Luther King did in the civil rights era, Malcolm X did a lot of good, too. He scared a lot of whiteys into supporting the more moderate King. That doesn't mean I support Malcolm X's methods, but I understand they had an effect. In the gay community, the mainstream organizations tried very hard to get funding for AIDS. And I no doubt they had some success, but perhaps it was only the tactics that I don't support of groups like ACT UP that pushed through their radical tactics, pushed it forward. So I don't agree with the ACLU here, but I understand that they have pushed Obama to defend what he's done, and he has defended it. I give him a lot of credit for that. So what needs to be changed? Well, we need to change the military commissions. He's talked about that. He's going to do that. And I think we also need to change very much the way members of Congress are informed. I do want to take a moment to give you a chance to call in. I've been sort of going off for 48 minutes or so. But I do want to give you a chance to call in and add your 2 cents at 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. Feel free to agree, disagree, say anything you want. If you haven't heard the speech, you're still welcome to call in, though I highly recommend it. I think this will be one that will be studied for years to come. Frankly, it reminds me of the way Barack Obama directly addressed race back in the campaign when the Reverend Wright controversy happened. This is a man who, when pushed against the wall, and he was pushed. He was pushed. He was pushed by the right, who got the cowardly Democratic Party to deny funds for Guantanamo Bay. He was pushed by the left, by the ACLU, talking about Bush-Obama policies. And he came right through the middle and said, "Up, this is why I'm doing what I'm doing." I think it is a speech that will be remembered for quite some time. But I do think, and again, you're welcome to call in, 877-4-HEAD-ON. I always like when you do call. I do think that the way we allow the CIA to inform members of Congress has got to be changed. I discussed this with Republican Mike Lane a couple days ago on my show. And Mike said, hey, it was legal. It was legal to tell so few people, to tell only the Gang of Eight. What's the Gang of Eight? The Gang of Eight is the majority and minority leaders of the House and the Senate, the Speaker of the House, the Minority Leader of the House, the Majority of the Senate, the Minority Leader of the Senate. That would be, in the present case, Reid, McConnell, Pelosi, and Boehner. And also to tell the four heads, two Democratic, two Republican, of the Senate and House Intelligence Committees. And I said to Mike, well, that's not the way it should be. Because you can't take effective action when that's all the people who know. I remember when Senator Rockefeller of West Virginia was informed about the warrantless wiretapping of hundreds of millions of Americans. And he was brought in alone. He wasn't allowed to have his staff. He wasn't allowed to have his lawyers present. Now, I assure you, that the head of the Senate Intelligence Committee and the minority ranking member of the Senate Intelligence Committee have plenty of staff with lots and lots of top secret clearances. Heck, I was going to work on the Homeland Security Committee myself, which is lesser than the Intelligence Committee, and they started to give me one until I decided to leave and go to radio. And, you know, my boss at the time, Barney Frank, was not number one or on the committee. Rockefeller, Pelosi, Harmon, all the intelligence heads got lots of staff and lawyers who have security clearances, trustworthy Americans. But people who can inform their boss. Members of Congress, it probably won't surprise you, don't know everything and don't handle everything. And a lot of times their effectiveness depends on their staff. That's true of the President of the United States. That's true of any business. That's true of members of Congress. And when you tell Nancy Pelosi or Senator Rockefeller, that you have to attend these things alone, without any staff, and you can't write anything down. I don't know about you, but when I take classes, when I hear speeches, I write stuff down, I take notes. It helps me remember things. It's a pretty basic thing to do. You're not allowed to do that. And now the CIA would have us believe that Nancy Pelosi is wrong when she says that in September 2002, she wasn't informed that anyone was waterboarded, even though we now know that people were waterboarded in September 2002 before Pelosi was informed. Well, my hero in this regard is Senator Bob Graham. I've always had a lot of respect for Senator Bob Graham of Florida, former Senator Bob Graham. I remember when he ran for president. His campaign didn't last too long. Poor Bob Graham has a habit of writing down where he is every second of every minute of every day. He has the most complete, anal retentive diaries of any human being I have ever heard of. Indeed, one of the main reasons why he was forced to drop out of the Democratic race for president is because the diaries were so complete as to make him seem kind of silly. John Stewart made fun of him. It's easy to do. 6:52, went to the toilet. 6:54, what he ate for lunch or dinner. 7:02 to 7:09, watched 7 minutes of CNN. 7:09 to 7:16, called his wife to say, I love you. Yeah. It's a bit, shall we say, over-documented. But when Bob Graham said that he wasn't informed by the CIA on the dates they say they informed him, I believe Bob Graham. Because I don't know anybody that takes contemporaneous notes the way Bob Graham does. In fact, it's largely my respect for Senator Graham that made me listen to him when in 2002 he was one of the few members of Congress to read not just the National Intelligence Estimate, the one that says that Saddam Hussein may get weapons of mass destruction, but also to read the footnotes and the minority report. And Graham reported back then, and that's why I had this information early in 2003, that there was more in the footnotes that he couldn't talk about. But there was more outside the executive summary than actually Trump that was in the executive summary. In other words, Cheney put curveball on the front page for everyone to see and hid in the secret notes the 999 people that disputed what curveball had to say. Well, Senator Graham, to his credit, read the other 999. Most senators didn't. Senator Graham, to his credit, voted against authorization to go to war in Iraq. But half the Democrats didn't. Well, 40% didn't. My point is that Bob Graham has said quite clearly that the CIA telling him that he was told four times about waterboarding was BS. And he said it to their face. And unlike Nancy Pelosi, who fumbled with her notes and frankly may not remember exactly what she was told, no one could doubt Bob Graham, Mr. Note Taker, a man who records every bowel movement he's ever had. They knew he was right. The CIA had to back down. It's time to change the law. And Bob Graham, to his credit, has ways to change the law. Right now, the law is, and it may surprise you, I know it would surprise Mike Lane, the law is that the full Intelligence Committee has to be briefed. Shocking. You would think it was just the Gang of Eight. No. The Gang of Eight is only briefed when it's a covert action. The kind where, you know, the Bay of Pigs. We're about to invade a country and they don't know we're going to invade them. The kind of thing where you want to have plausible deniability, where you want to have spies that are, you know, finding out nuclear secrets. And even then the full committee has to eventually be briefed. The problem is this covert action stuff, the kind where you only brief the Gang of Eight, this exception has trumped the rule. Well, Bob Graham writes in a editorial in the Washington Post today, it's time to bring back the rule, not the exception. Again, my words, not his. But as he points out, warrantless wiretaps, enhanced interrogation, treated as covert actions by Bush and only informed the Gang of Eight, but those activities, he writes, subject to the least congressional oversight, have the greatest potential to sully our national honor and international reputation. He's right. And that's why he has a proposal. To number one, tell people what the briefing's going to be before it happens so they can do research. Pretty basic. Allow people to have staff there. And to bring in the Gang of Eight together. Not one-on-one where you got one member of Congress surrounded by six intelligence officers. Bring them at least a majority in so they can discuss it amongst themselves. And take action if necessary. Inform the full committee. Improve CIA records management. In fact, Bob Graham suggests, keep a transcript or at least detailed minutes of every classified briefing. Is that so hard to do? He even suggests making all participants sign showing they've agreed to something or specifically dissented from it. What a great idea. We need strong intelligence. We need strong congressional oversight. We need court oversight. We need a president who respects checks and balances, and we have a president who does, and none too soon, because the dangers are real. The country of Iran has just launched a solid fuel missile capable of hitting Israel and our bases in the Middle East. The United Nations, even, the special assistant to UN Secretary Kofi Annan, said today, quote, a fateful consensus is forming around the proposition that war with Iran is inevitable. We've got a lot of troubles around the corner. And if we don't have President, Congress, and the courts on board practicing American values and the rule of law, we're in a world for a world of hurt. Our President, Barack Obama, has put us on the right path. I hope you enjoyed the show today. If you have any questions or comments, please post them at RadioInsideScoop.com. This is Mark Levine, signing off.